From Lake Superior Hall on the campus of Grand Valley State University, I'm Josh Albertus. This is CMJ 260.
I want to thank the members of the Senate and the House, members of my cabinet, for all you've done. The idea that this took 5 years to reauthorize, I was out of office those years.
Since signing the Violence Against Women Reauthorization Act last Wednesday, the Biden administration and congressional allies of the legislation have been touting its success as a victory over domestic and sexual violence. With $575 million included in the act, there's plenty to go around. But where exactly is the money going? And what could the allocations really mean for survivors and prevention? To find out, I spoke with Leah Short, the Interim Associate Director at the Gail Davis Center for Women and Gender Equity at Grand Valley State University. Discussing the Act's provisions, Short explained how she believes where there's reason for praise, there's also reason for pause. It's Friday, March 25th. So Leah, first of all, just to get some perspective on the issue as a whole, from what you've seen in your work, how would you describe or contextualize the magnitude of the issue of gender-based violence on our local level here at Grand Valley, as well as the nation?
So from my perspective, which is informed by 12 years of victim advocacy work, also with direct services, with victim survivors, crisis intervention, hospital visits, this is like where my perspective is coming from, that these programs and these conversations are so important. They're critical. When we don't talk about these things, or when folks internalize them or carry this on their own, it leads to more harm for that person, right? Whether you can physically see that harm, or they are internally, mental, emotionally having to deal with this trauma alone.
And just to get some additional background before talking about what the Act could do for services like yours, what are the kinds of services and support you and your colleagues at the center are prepared to offer to survivors and all members of the Grand Valley community?
Currently, the different services that we have in the Center for Women and Gender Equity, exclusively and kind of more specifically around gender-based violence, in general. So we have our victim advocate. Her name is Rachel Jabuda. Meetings with Rachel are private. So that means that Rachel is not a mandated reporter to Title IX.
Okay. And so what is the difference between someone who does and does not report to Title IX? What's the meaning of the difference there?
So most people that a victim survivor will talk to are mandatory reporters. That means at an institution or at a university setting, that means that if I'm a mandatory reporter and you disclose to me an incident of gender-based violence, I am mandated to report that and to let Title IX know about that happening. However, with Rachel, it's a great starting point. If you even think you might have been impacted by gender-based violence, you're not really sure. Maybe you're just feeling weird about an encounter you've had or something going on. So Rachel's a really great touch point for that, to have the have a conversation, talk out feelings, anything of that nature, and then go from there on what resources they might need.
Okay. Yeah. That makes sense.
Yeah. So she can help look at reporting options if that's their choice. If they don't want to report, that's also totally okay. And she can help them seek any other services that they might want, like therapeutic services, anything of that nature. And then, yeah, I say that's what Rachel does.
Okay. And what about the rest of the staff? What do the rest of you kind of facilitate in the center?
We also have our violence prevention education. So I'm the violence prevention and education coordinator and the interim associate director in the center right now. I was initially hired on to do violence prevention education. So what we have to offer currently, I should say, we have a set of topics of workshops that we have that are already pre-made. We have a cohort of about 15 violence prevention peer educators who go through extensive training on gender-based violence, justice, healing, crisis intervention, micro-counseling skills. So those peer educators then go facilitate these workshops. We have them about healthy relationships, unhealthy relationships, consent, gender-based violence 101, rape culture, leading with empathy, and then kind of like our bread and butter is supporting victim survivors. We also do all of the education for the athletics department, both for staff and students. We also train the RAs and then anything else in between.
Enter VAWA, the Violence Against Women's Act. First passed in 1994, the act was designed to provide support, resources, and programs for survivors and prevention of gender-based domestic and sexual violence. Requiring reauthorization every 5 years, the act has been dormant since it expired in 2019. A disagreement over a provision to prohibit dating abusers from obtaining firearms led to a breakdown in passing legislation. Now, after renewed bipartisan negotiations, reauthorization means hundreds of millions of dollars in funding to battle sexual violence. So, Congress has now reauthorized the Violence Against Women's Act. This is meant to provide those kinds of resources and funding for those kinds of programs that prevent this kind of violence. So, how could the act being in place once again affect your efforts on behalf of survivors here at the center? Or what might you expect could happen because of this?
You know, I feel like I'm a Leo. I have feelings about everything. But what I will say is the actual, so if you look a little bit deeper into VAWA and where that money goes, only 25% of it historically has went to prevention efforts, violence prevention education. And then 5% of that funding goes to working with marginalized communities. So we, although this might be an exciting or, I don't know, optimistic thing that's being passed, for what I do, realistically, we might get funding from it. You have to apply for these grants. And then there are also limitations to what you can use your funding for, what content can be in your programs, who you're cross collaborating with. So while it's exciting that, you know, awesome, we're putting some money towards prevention efforts, realistically, communities who need this funding the most or would benefit the most from this are a teeny tiny, tiny portion of that. And when we break that down even more, like realistically, for instance, 1 in 2 trans people will be victimized by sexual violence or gender-based violence in their lifetime. 1 in 2. That is a very large statistic. When we break it down even more, especially thinking of childhood statistics, that's a lot of where my perspective comes in as well. Is okay, we're on a college campus. I know statistically 1 in 4 girls and 1 in 6 boys will be sexually abused before they're 18. So with that in mind, people are coming into a college campus already having experienced victimization typically. So when I see things like this being passed, I really, really hope and wish that there will be a push towards more services, because we also know that gender-based violence, specifically sexual violence, is one of the least prosecuted crimes. It's people say that it's one of the hardest to prosecute. It also very rarely will result in there being a finding of guilt or giving the healing or justice that a victim survivor is looking for. So when all of this money is being dumped into two entities that may work with victim survivors, but they definitely do not provide direct services to them.
And those two entities you're mentioning, law enforcement and prosecutors, they along with the courts are getting about 30% of what VAWA is allocating, while grants to colleges are only getting about 8% or $22 million. What's your feeling behind that?
It definitely gives me pause, because who is this money really for, right? Like, these are just things that I question and think about a lot. And how could we maybe better use, like, you know, implement this funding? So Well, I'm like hopeful that, I mean, that's how I do this work every day. I'm hopeful that we can find healing and justice collectively as a community. I'm also sometimes a little too realistic with these statistics and with this funding. So yeah, it's also temporary funding. So like, even if we get it, probably will last for 1 to 2 years and then we'll have to scramble for funding again. Like my position is not permanent. I'm adjunct. Like, I don't know if I'll have a job still like in June. I assume I will, but
yeah, no. I totally understand. So I just wanted to ask one last thing. In addition to your perception of the act that you've already shared, is there anything else you feel like needs to be said when considering VAWA and its impact on efforts like yours and the sphere of gender-based violence as a whole?
The only thing I'll add that I forgot to say when we were talking about VAWA is that, like, even when you start with the name of it, like Violence Against Women Act, I'm already like, we know, like, we have so much data, we have so much information that tells us, yes, women, cisgender women are disproportionately impacted by gender-based violence compared to cisgender men, if we're just talking in binaries. So I just wanted to, I would be remiss if I didn't say something about the language of VAWA, because to infer and continue to push forward the ideology that only cisgendered women need funding and help for violence and harm, gender-based violence, super misleading. It really, imagine all of the victim survivors that feel like crap because they see that. It doesn't feel good to be left out of survivor spaces, and I don't see a future moving forward of how everyone can thrive and heal together if we're going to continue to push forward like binary thinking like that.
Thank you to our guest, Leah Short. Our music was provided by Nefix on YouTube. That's it for this CMJ 260 podcast. I'm Josh Albertus. See you next time.